This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
That's right. Become a member. If you're not a member, you bloody well should be. And remember, we're coming up to Radiothon in June. Any money you donate is tax deductible, and we will make better use of it than any politician or any government of any colour with respect, Ave. Our next guest is Ave Pleely from the Greens. He's the, in the upper house, the North Eastern Metropolitan Region member. Good morning, Ave. How are you?
Good morning. Well, thanks. Thanks for having me back.
It's a pleasure. Now, tell us, Janet was not really across the story about this article about what people wear in Parliament and what they should wear and what they're not allowed to wear. So tell us about it.
Well, it's all a bit strange, really. To be honest, you know, Parliament is a workplace. I'm there doing my job. For me, that doesn't involve wearing a tie. I'll be honest, I've never had to really do that in my prior
career. Do you own a tie?
I do own one. And early in the term, I did attempt to tie it and wear it, and that was a whole ordeal. Takes far too long than it should, for me at least. And so at the end of the day, I just want to do my job in what I would say is professional attire that is functional for the workplace that I'm in. Hmm. So for me, that's, I'm wearing a t-shirt under a jacket. Yeah. I've still got the blazer on. I'm still presenting myself in a way that I would consider formal. You know, I wear my nicer shoes, that kind of thing. At the end of the day, I think as long as people are comfortable and presenting themselves in a professional manner, that's probably appropriate for the workplace that you're in, as would be with most industries. But apparently for some people, that is a really, really big deal. And so we saw media coverage. I know that Georgie Purcell, a colleague of mine from the upper house who you regularly have in, is also sort of pushing back at what is quite a conservative lens that sometimes is applied to what is expected of parliamentarians to wear. And some of that is in protest, and I do appreciate those sentiments. Like as a queer person in Parliament, where there's only so few of you, like I do relate to that absolutely. Like there are these sort of conservative structures around that I think could be resisted somewhat to really shake up what our representation at the state parliamentary level is. And so for me, that's, you know, not wearing a tie, which I wouldn't think is, as you indicated earlier, introducing the program, I wouldn't think that's the leading story that we could be talking about in Victoria right now. But apparently in, you know, a Sunday newspaper spread, it is the key thing to be covered.
Oh.
And so, you know, I've got the earring on, which apparently was noteworthy in my representations to the state parliament. But at the end of the day, I'm focused on actually delivering on the issues that are affecting Victorians and not as focused on what it is I'm wearing.
I think it's, you know, dress codes are really fascinating, aren't they? Because, I mean, it is actually a really serious issue, particularly if we think about how transgender diverse and queer kids in school and school uniforms. We're still looking to see exemptions in the Equal Opportunity Act so that kids can express themselves appropriately as they attend school, because that's not the case, and they can in fact be punished for not rocking up in a uniform that the school decides is appropriate. So I think it's all part of the same story, isn't it? It's about institutions deciding how you should present yourself and making judgments about that. So on one level, it's not such a big deal, I guess, but on the other level, it's a really big deal for lots of kids.
It's a great point. I think, how do we expect, you know, broader, particularly diverse members of the community to trust politicians, to trust what our state parliament is doing, if they don't see people, particularly those from the queer community, reflecting themselves in an authentic way in that professional setting? It is important in that sense.
And I think there's also, there's a generation, dare I say it, Maka, because was it 31 years you said that Joy's been on air? So I think there probably is a bit of a generation thing. I think about my daughter who's 19, and her idea of formal is to get out her Jordan 1s. Which probably costs more than any other pair of shoes I've got.
And my idea of formal is to put on the kilt.
And so,
where are the kilts in Parliament?
Are you allowed to wear?
I want to know.
Are you allowed to wear Jordan 1s? I think it's an interesting. It's, you know, these sort of dress code conversations are really interesting because they are about expression, utility, but also, you know, who gets to be part of a club and who doesn't, and often it's not queer people.
Absolutely, yeah, and it's something that I think, as we noted earlier, we should be pushing back against. We want to change that. We want to have a more reflective space, the state parliament, representing all Victorians.
So a big issue. Yeah. It is an important issue.
So we also saw Rave finally, the report done by Ken Lay, former police commissioner, on a proposed medically supervised injecting room in the CBD. The government has it.
They've had it for quite some time.
Well, they've had it, but yeah, I suppose they've acknowledged that they're now thinking about it. So there's two issues here. One is pill testing, which the government seems absolutely opposed to, you know, because they say it encourages drug use. I could draw a long straw and say, don't require a car to get a roadworthy when you change the registration, because if it's unsafe, it could kill someone.
I mean, as we've discussed on this program many a time, it is about reducing harm, acknowledging the reality that these substances, both injectable and in pill form or otherwise, they are out there. People are using them, be they legal or not legal. And so if we accept that reality, what steps can we take as legislators to keep people as safe as we possibly can?
Providing education,
awareness. That's right. Even trials, because we know that where those have been run, i.e. the ACT, those have been successful, and now they have ongoing fixed site pill testing operational in Canberra. I mean, to touch on the Ken Lay report details, we haven't seen that fully released. What we saw earlier in the week through Channel 9 was reported leaks of information from that document. I think across the entirety of the parliament, people are very, very keen to see that report finally in the public domain, that people can actually read that data and have a more informed conversation, I hope, about injectable drug use, particularly in Melbourne CBD. What we did see leaked through that story was, in a way, I don't think necessarily anything that's new to the conversation, that there were, it doesn't apparently specify an address in the report that is where the site should go in Melbourne CBD, but it names three sort of epicenters, which would be appropriate in terms of where drug use is occurring. And those are places that have been named before. It's, you know, Elizabeth and Flinders, Top of Bourke, Queen Victoria Market. These are places that we have spoken about before as potential sites, and that government has looked into, to my understanding, previously. But what's happening now is, the longer that this report has been withheld, we've seen a fear campaign run rampant across the community, devoid of really the facts and data, the latest data that you would need to show the community why it is crucial that we have these services offered in some of these areas. Because right now we've got the North Richmond site, which is doing incredible work. But that, if that's the only site we've got in Victoria, that really places such unfair pressure on that one service to provide this crucial health support to often very vulnerable members of the community who need our protection if we're serious about keeping them safe and well and out of the back of an ambulance and out of our hospitals. It's for the benefit of everyone that we have these services available. So again, I will call on this Labor government to finally release the report and release their response, which, as they promised a long time ago under the former Premier, would be a supervised injecting room in the Melbourne CBD.
Do you, Janet, you know, as putting you on the spot here, Thorn Harbour Health, you know, is an organisation that focuses on, you know, community health, education and prevention. Do you wonder why the government hasn't released this report? Is there some,
I think,
what's the political imperative here?
I wouldn't know about the political imperative, but I would say, I would certainly say that Thorn Harbour's position is to support the call for release of the report, and to support harm reduction, harm minimisation strategies in relation to drug use and intravenous drug use, which is obvious when you draw the parallel across into HIV and other bloodborne transmissions. Yeah. So obviously that's a position that's been held for a really, really long time, and very, very strong support for facilities such as the one in Richmond, which has clearly saved lives. So I think, you know, there's this really strong alignment there with Thorn Harbour's position in relation to harm reduction and for the, you know, what we think is in the report and the recommendations which we hope to see there. So I think there's a, you know, that in terms of the political, it's a really weird time, don't you think, politically at the moment, where you've got people on all sides of Parliament saying things that you wouldn't have expected them to say, you know, even if you think about the announcement of the Governor General. So there's lots of kind of strange things happening, and so I wouldn't be able to hazard a guess about politically what's going on, except
spread and sick.
We've got governments holding on to government by, you know, half a seat and two and a half dogs and on a Saturday morning, and you know, they're maybe not always looking to what they believe, but looking to what's going to keep them in government.
I mean, we've got such a crucial moment right now in that we've got a new premier. It's an opportunity to reflect on the policy settings that we have and the leadership on some of these issues that's been going on in this state. And so we've seen in the drug checking or pill testing conversation that you referred to earlier, Macca, we've seen this shift in tone from the really blunt, just say no approach that we had seen previously.
Sounds like Nancy Reagan.
I think that's what that harks back to, is my understanding. Yeah. But the new sort of rhetoric around that we are considering this issue and that there is advice being sought. And I know that many in the sector and in the community really, really welcome that shift. But, you know, we've got a major festival on today in Flemington, and we know that each time these events happen, there is the risk of drug-related harm. Again, acknowledging that reality that these substances are out there and that people are using them regardless of what cops or politicians or people across the community tell, you know, these instructions of just say no, just don't do it. It's happening regardless. Well, what can we do to keep people safe?
The principles of harm reduction is really around, information so people can protect themselves, because we know that young people do get their pills tested so that they can take informed risks.
And it's that cohort that I think I spoke about last time I was here that consistently decide off that information that they've received from a health professional, they decide to then discard that substance. And we see that in all jurisdictions to varying degrees that offer these services. So crucial and empowering to people across the community, particularly young people, to be able to make a more informed decision about what it is they're putting in their body.
Jana, just briefly, it's Paul here. Hi. What is Thorn Harper's Health's official position on this policy?
We support harm reduction. We support facilities like Richmond's injecting facilities, safe injecting facilities.
I would advocate for pill testing if it came up at festivals.
We support pill testing. Yep. So it's all about the same policy, which has been so successful in HIV, hasn't it? Where we're now looking at virtual elimination of new preventable transmissions of HIV because of harm reduction strategies.
Based on evidence.
So I think it's a really long-standing policy for Thorn Harbour, and, you know, when you think about our history, it makes absolute sense in terms of bloodborne viruses.
40 years of evidence-based decisions that have saved lives. So,
and looks to be able to, you know, we're on the precipice of eliminating HIV transmission in Australia.
Yeah. So what else, Ave? You've got a minute. What else do you want to tell us about?
Well, there's a budget coming up, but a minute might not be long enough to speak to it. I mean, as we're hearing about on all levels of Parliament, government, right across the community, in every forum, cost of living in particular is something that is really putting a lot of pressure on people. And so this upcoming budget in May is a really significant opportunity for the state Labor government to demonstrate its priorities in terms of taking care of people. We're obviously in a difficult budgetary position following the years of COVID, but nonetheless, it should not be everyday Victorians that are worse off in terms of how we correct that. We know that there are the big banks, there are groups across the community who perhaps could be paying their fair share, paying more in terms of tax or a rebalancing that could occur that enables everyday Victorians to have what they need, which is housing, which is access to quality food that they can afford, including the people who work at the supermarkets. It's having a progressive, radically positive approach to what it means to run an economy in this state. And so, you know, I know I've got colleagues in the progressive crossbench who want to see a cannabis industry that could be regulated and taxed and think of the revenue that could bring to Victoria. Harm reduction services like those we've been talking about, which could keep people out of our hospitals and ambulances. There's a lot we could be doing. And so I'm hopeful that this is an opportunity that we can really claim to keep Victorians safe and well, and a positive approach for the future of this state.
Thanks, Ave. I mean, they're good points, and we'll explore them a bit further as Tim Pallas brings the budget down. I want to thank you for coming in and, you know, for your advocacy on these issues. I think they're important issues. And good to see that you're going to be in the Sunday paper with your earring.
Is that right? From time to time.
From time to time. On parliamentary dress standards.
The opportunity, everyone's looking at your dress now, so the opportunity is to put the messages on the shirt.
Yeah, on the shirt.
Yeah. I'm actually I'll send you a Thorn Harbour right t-shirt. Thank you.
Cool. Go bling, Eve.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go for it. You are on Saturday Magazine Joy 94.9 with Macca and Janet Jukes. Our next guest is the Federal Labor Member for McNamara, Josh Burns. Stay with us.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.